Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And today we're going to travel in the supermind. We're going to talk about the supermind. It's an amazing subject. I'm sure you're all curious about it. And to help us do that, I'm going to be interviewing a man who started off as a classical psychiatrist and became a leader in the field of psychiatry, and in the process of his work, discovered the supermind and has written this amazing book called Living in the Supermind, From Personal Mind to Spiritual Mind. And we're talking with the author of Living in the Supermind, Dr. Maury Pressman. Maury, welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you could join us. I loved your book. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to see, to understand our supernatural identities, our supernatural realities from the perspective of your life and how you came into it and how you see it in relationship to the standard world. And can inform us about it that way.
Okay.
So I'm really happy to talk about what the supermind is with you. It's obviously a special mind, and it's a beyond mind, and you live in that. It's a very spiritual life that you've developed, and so you become very familiar with your access to it. So you're somebody who walks your talk. And I like so much in the book about how helpful it is to help us all access the supermind. I don't want to say our superminds. I want to say the supermind. And yet we can only access it through ourselves. So can you talk more about how you discovered this?
Sure. It was a very gradual process, as it is for many of us. Some people just break through and have a sudden enlightenment. They're rather rare. But I'm a person that takes little steps by little steps over a long period of time that can amount to some distance. And I think that's the way it is with most of us. But in the meantime, you build up knowledge of how to get there, and you build up knowledge of how to tell other people how to get there on their way. You also build up strength of character, psychological muscle. So let's talk first of all what it is. It is a mind beyond mind, but that means only it's beyond what we are taught that we have, what society says is the mind, but really we have so much hidden power that is dismissed by people calling it flaky or imagination or just belonging to certain special people. For example, when you achieve the supermind, or get close to it is a better way of putting it, or even on your way to it, you begin to respect your intuition, your hunches, and put them into a practical perspective. But then you also begin to know what the other person is like, what the other person is feeling. You begin to get thought transference, mind-to-mind thought transference. You also get certain healing capacities. You can heal yourself with special visualizations. Your energy can heal other people. You can get very smart about feeling whether the other person is a good person or not a good person, or the environment is a good environment or not a good environment. And some people can even have what's called remote viewing, meaning that they can see across the country. Not in exact terms, not in sharp perspective, but enough to be scientifically useful, and the Army has been using that for a long time. So I can sort of sum up at this point that it is a power and a powerful mind that we have, which is dismissed as being beyond us, but it's not, and we can talk about how to get there. Dismissed as being only imagination, but it's not. And there's plenty of evidence that comes from quantum physics itself to validate that.
Well, I've been using intuition for a long time professionally, and it's something that I've been teaching for many, many years to thousands of people.
Great.
And so I understand our capacity to tap in. What I like in reading your book is you don't talk about intuition at all in it, because I think you take it for granted that it's just the nature of the supermind.
Maybe I should talk about it more. It's so important.
Well, I read it into what you were writing, that the supermind knows what intuition knows. And intuition is just a handle, a word that empowers us to use it. It's like an okayness to be in the supermind, because we're using intuition.
I look upon it something like this. Well, first of all, we all experience it when we get gut feelings, but we're taught not to pay too much attention to it. Yet they're very important, or hunches. The way I understand it, just to put it very briefly, and I can elaborate if you want me to, that we are surrounded by a higher mind, a cosmic mind, frankly, that we can open to if we let ourselves. We get that cosmic mind sort of descends and gives us inspiration or sudden intuitive knowings, if we let it, if we don't dismiss it. That's really the source of some of these genius things that are in history or are around us, such as Mozart writing a symphony when he is 4. Or, to put it another way, super athletic performance. Or, to put it another way, Archimedes, who discovered the weight of water by a hunch when he was in the bathtub. So there is a large, very, very wise, spiritual, if you will, mind, which surrounds us like an ocean in which we are swimming.
Well, and you talk about that in the book, too, is that our thoughts don't come from our mind.
Right. Strange, isn't it?
Well, most people don't understand that.
Well, there's more and more good reason to believe it. For example, more and more people, there's some people who have been in coma, arouse and can describe everything that's been going on around them. More and more, there are those people who have had near-death experiences, some of them even with a flat line in their EEG, which means death, come back and can describe what was going on around them. That's a consciousness which has to come from beyond the brain, because the brain at these times, like in coma, or in near-death, or in anesthesia, is really not active. But nevertheless, the consciousness is there in these people.
So the consciousness lives on.
Mm-hmm.
And our consciousness is recognized through thought, through awareness, and can describe itself as these people have done. And when they've come out of comas and from near-death experiences, they've had a lot to tell us what went on in their minds, what they experienced during these times where it was obvious that nothing should have been clicking in their brains.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of that, the rest of us who haven't had those experiences can use other means to tap in. We don't need to take that extreme. And you've had a lifetime of meditation and talk about it a lot in the book, and even the resistance to meditation, how helpful it would be if we could get beyond our fears about it.
Mm-hmm. It's not only possible, it's not even difficult, although it does take effort. I've only had a half a lifetime of meditation. Somewhere in the middle of my life, I met a guru from the East who was sent over here to teach Kashmir Shaivism. And I was really a very strict academician at the time and thought that it was very strange I should be in his presence. But all of a sudden, I began to feel great love for the guy, which surprised me, and a great expansion in my heart in his presence to help the world through my profession. He gave me what's called Shaktipat, meaning it's a shot of energy which comes from certain very advanced people, and I would go into spasms of love, much to my surprise. I would later ask him, how could I learn more? And he said, meditate, meditate, meditate. And I thought that was pretty simple, but I tried. Pretty simple advice. But I tried, and it was very, very hard because I was and am a very restless person. But little by little by little, I withstood it, which is the secret. If we face our annoyances, our restlessness, our fears, our guilts, and just absorb them as if we were a sponge, they will pass. And so this restlessness passed little by little, and I got into a state of peace, which is really the secret of how to get there, whether you're sitting in a chair or taking a walk or in the middle of some kind of an activity.
And you were inspired by a great teacher, because I know about him. I never met him personally. His name was Muktananda.
Right.
And over the years, hundreds of his devotees became clients of mine.
And, really?
And yes, and I worked with them. And the word got around his ashram about me. So I became popular. And I was very impressed with the man. Not that I had met him, but he had an energy that I could tap into that I really was overjoyed with. And I was sad at his passing.
Super. So we have that in common.
Yes.
That was a great moment in my life. It made a great deal of difference.
I see that. And yet you were only an enlightenment waiting to happen.
Well, it's a journey, you know, for all of us. It doesn't take anything very, very special. There's an inherent goodness within each of us if we'll pay attention to it. And that's really the road to the supermind, to everything. And we can talk about that, and I can validate it. So I was ready, you know. I was lucky, but perhaps it would have happened in another way. Although I think there's a plan overhead that we can cooperate with, and I cooperated.
Right, and that's the arc plan that you talk about in the book.
Yeah, arch plan.
Arch plan.
Okay.
I think of it as an archetypal plan. That's why I call it the arc plan.
Exactly. It is exactly that. It's an architectural plan that's up there in the higher planes, perhaps by higher guides. Which doesn't mean that we're puppets, but we can cooperate, we can work together, and you get a better infusion of energy that way. When you're cooperating, you're in that flow, or you can resist.
I think we helped create that in the first place, and then we came here to live it out.
Yes, I think so too.
And your book is so helpful in many ways because you talk about what's needed to live in this consciousness. And early in the book, you talk about the witness,
mm-hmm.
and how we need to become more the witness.
Right. Well, the witness is the self-observing self. It's the awareness that you're talking about. When we're watching ourselves, we are in the witness. It's like we're in a hot air balloon looking down on ourselves and the people that we're talking to. Even as you and I and others engage in this conversation, I'm watching myself. I'm sure you're watching yourself at the same time this is going on. But it's a very, very powerful and valuable seat in which we can observe what's going on within us We can know what's good about us, and we can confront our demons. With confronting our demons, we can transcend them, make ourselves better people by overcoming them. We can cultivate our talents. We can cultivate what's good for society as we serve people. So the witness, the self-observing self, is very, very much present if you'll pay attention to it.
It's a mindfulness, and, right?
Absolutely.
And you say also that the witness never stops, even in the deepest states of meditation when we're supposed to have a totally blank mind and know nothing. I never believed in that. I've always said there's something else. I remember going to an ashram one time. Some guru said, any questions? You know, and my question really was, well, and I don't remember how I framed it, but it was really about how can you ever stop being aware? And I, because that's kind of what people talk about in the deepest states of meditation, that you lose your mindfulness, you lose your thought. And in the book, you talk about that you still never lose the witness.
It's my thought was, how can you lose your self-consciousness in these states, but I think that you're always aware that you have a blank mind, let's say. Otherwise, how would it be registered that you've been there? So that much of the witness remains. Although maybe some people are so advanced, who knows? But I think that the identity always remains. And in fact, the things that I've read says that even if the body dies and you transition, you know, and you've really gotten into temporary heaven, you're certainly there with your identity, even as you join everybody and feel like a part of the all.
Right.
You still have this spot called yourself.
Right. And I've had some shows recently with people who speak with the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating what the dead have to say. So they're there. And we will join them at some point, and we'll still be alive. And so this witness, this consciousness, this sense of self never ends.
I agree.
And so we want to make the most of it now. And apparently you're doing that in your work and in your own life of living in the supermind. And you talk about it so much as a psychiatrist, too, because there's so much doubt about anything other than the classical mind and how people put a lot of this down, calling it imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And that word is misused.
Well, I think imagination comes from the word, it was related to the word image, and we do image or visualize. I taught the way back, you know, I came upon using visualization with the Olympic athletes. That was back in 1972. And I didn't believe the results, but they were there. So maybe imagination is not flaky. Maybe imagination is a perception.
And it's a tool.
Yes.
And so you've learned to use it, but so many people use it derogatorily.
Absolutely.
And so you're a pioneer of changing the consciousness about that word.
Well, you have to stay in balance. You know, you and I know that if we surrender only to that inner world, then we're not going to fit into society, and we might even be called psychotic. But if you balance it with an awareness of the world around you and things which are practical, without smothering it, it becomes a part of a much wiser mind.
Right, and I've tried to do that in my life, being a professional intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to live a very normal life and be very grounded, and I have. I'm proud of that I represent how to live in this world appropriately.
Right.
And still live in the supermind.
Mm-hmm.
And you do too.
Yes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be useful. I mean, part of our mission, or we're here for a purpose.
Right. We might as well be out there if we can't be grounded.
Right.
And so let's talk about some of the things that you've talked about in the book, like time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed with how you look at memory.
Yes. Well, they say that time is all one thing, and I think that that's true. But it's very hard to wrap your mind around it. The way I begin to understand it is that everything is now, that's for sure. Even as we remember, we're living in the now. But there are times when we can go into the past and it's so vivid that it is now. For example, if somebody's been in a severe auto accident have this great fear of getting into a car again, if you have them go into hypnosis and bring back the accident, it'll come back in full-fledged glory, and they'll be there in the present again. And by the way, that relieves them. That relieves a piled-up emotional cyst, which has to be drained. But they are in the present. And then there are studies which show that people can see the future. People are going to not only predict the future, as some psychics do, but in scientific experiments, they might send somebody across the country to a certain chosen spot. And in their scientific studies of remote viewing, they will begin to see that happening even before it happens in real time. So that's some evidence of the future being present.
And many of us, many people have premonitions. There are a lot of people who are good at that.
Yes. And the premonitions then come true in real time.
Right. So everybody has access to the supermind, and for some people it shows up more easily. Other than that, people can use meditation. And what else can they do to find their supermind?
Oh, dismiss doubt when they start getting some premonitions.
Okay.
To dismiss doubt. But the way I look at things is this, that we're descended from higher energy. And in the course of that, in the course of creation, what I call a soul as opposed to a spirit is created. And the soul is the messenger of the creator or the creative energy and makes from itself various bodies, the first being the mind body, and then the next in lower frequency being the astral or dream or emotional body, and the next being the physical body, which is enlivened by a life body. When we go into relaxation, we take our attention away from the physical body. If we make ourselves really, really comfortable, we forget the physical body. When we take our attention or our awareness away from our emotions by letting them calm down, they do calm down. When we take our attention away from thought distraction, just let our intruding thoughts float away, we get into that peaceful zone, which is what I call this residence of the soul. And that's like a funnel to the upper mind or to the supermind. In other words, as we become less and less self-conscious, less and less selfish, you might say, and more oriented toward the allness that we are a part of, the more and more we enjoy other people and enjoy nature, the more we become other-minded, the closer we become to getting into this zone, which opens to the higher mind within us. And we do begin to get certain powers. Again, people want to be around us. We feel more and more love. We can get these premonitions. We have these healing powers. We begin to see what's going to happen. And all of that can be smothered by doubt because, again, we'll be told over and over again, that that's silly, that's imagination, but perhaps it's not.
This is great, and these words are terrific. Also, you talk about working with dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way, if we have too much doubt, at least we can dream.
Oh, yes. And dreams are very important. They're always in the language of the night, and they really do open to this higher mind, but they're disguised, and there are ways of understanding them. One of the ways is to be intuitive about them.
Right, and also to intend them. To go to sleep at night and seek those kinds of dreams that were given messages and visions.
True, intention's important.
Yeah. And also, there's hypnosis for some people who have trouble doing the other things.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done that with your patients, right?
I do that a lot, yeah. Yeah. And hypnosis isn't such a mystery, by the way. We all emanate energy. And in hypnosis, you help people with your energy, with your good intention, with your getting yourself into a state of relaxed surrender. You help the other person to get into that state. And when he or she does, they begin to open again to this higher realm, which accesses the supermind.
Well, this is so great to talk with you. We're nearing the end of the show. And it's been super. And I really enjoy the richness of your journey and your ability to communicate it in so many ways in your book, talk about all the experiences you've had and different experiences with patients to help them release things and open up. And it's important in your position in the world. You're an emeritus chairman of the Albert Einstein Medical Center in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
Chairman of psychiatry. So you've been a leader in your field. And so you really are a pioneer.
Thank you. Can I give my website just
sure.
in case anybody wants to look it up? It's Maury Pressman, MauriePressman.com. And my telephone number is on there. If someone wants to call me, I'll be very happy to talk with you. MauriePressman.com.
That's so wonderful that you are available and have this great book, Living in the Supermind. I'm thrilled to talk with you. It's very helpful to our audience, and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, and thank you so much.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for being a guest on Energy Stew. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. Lots of classes going on in New York. All kinds of opportunities. Please call. And thank you so much for listening.